We are recording. So, good morning. This meeting is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on November 15th, 2022. Dr. Bustillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of board members and staff.
Good morning. I'd like to welcome everybody to the November 15th, 2022 board meeting for physical therapy. Welcome to the Brookline College PTA students and their faculty. Glad to have you here. Hope it is informative for you. Okay, we'll do a roll call.
Thank you. Dr. King? Dr. King is absent. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Hike?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton may be absent as well. We'll come back and call his name again. Veronica Cardoza? Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Crowley?
Present.
Ms. Richardson?
Present.
And my name is Judy Chepius. Mr. Barton? Okay, staff is checking on Mr. Barton's anticipated attendance today. Monica, if you get any information back, please let us know.
Will do.
All right, the first item on the agenda is to approve the October 25th regular session meeting minutes. Does anyone have any corrections or changes to those minutes?
Says yeah, Mr. Greer.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Gianni. I was just going to move to approve.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say there was a spelling error on the regular session minutes. Let me pull it up here real quick. Right in the section for Trent Gibson, executive is not spelled correctly, so just wanted to make sure we got that corrected.
Any other additions or changes?
I'd move to approve the minutes as edited.
Second.
Who did
Mr. Greer did the first. Mr. Leone did the second.
Thank you.
All right. Any further discussion? All right. Let's go ahead and call the question.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the October 25th, 2022 regular session meeting minutes with the specified edits. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Marking Mr. Barton is absent. Motion passes.
Okay, next item is the October 25th, 2022 executive session minutes A. Any changes to those minutes?
Move to approve.
Second.
Let's go ahead and call the vote.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the October 25th, 2022 executive session A meeting minutes. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Just in case Mr. Barton has joined us, Mr. Barton? Listing his vote as absent as well. Motion passes.
Okay, on to number 4A, review, consideration, and possible action on physical therapist application requesting ADA accommodations. Stuart Deutsch, is Stuart present on the call?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you for being here. Would you be willing to answer questions from the board members?
Sure.
Great. Does anyone have any questions or concerns regarding his application?
This is Mr. Greer. Mr. Dirge, could you please just explain to us how your disability affects your, and I don't want to know how it affects your educational, but just your day-to-day life, how it affects your ability to complete any daily life functions and any accommodations you've received outside of the educational realm?
Yeah, sure. Good question. Thank you, Mr. Gert. So in my day-to-day life, this disability kind of, it makes it difficult to perform multiple tasks at once. And I know there's no real such thing as multitasking because you really switch from one project to the other, right? But for me, I have to stick on one project for a certain amount of time. And if there's other distractions, then I do not fully complete that task, if that makes sense. So I have to be really focused and concentrated on a specific task. If it's not something really, really important, then I can kind of move between different things. But if it's something with the family, or, for example, like I just went grocery shopping. If I was distracted grocery shopping, I probably wouldn't have gotten all the groceries that I needed because I would have been distracted. So accommodations in that regard, I've been seeing an ADHD help person to kind of help me navigate this new, I guess it's not really new, per se. I've had it my whole life, but I didn't know I had it until last year. So it kind of helped me understand some good strategies to help me focus on things, to be able to get the task done that I need to throughout the day, if that makes any sense. And I hope that I've sufficiently answered your question.
Look, yes, you did. I have some follow-up. You said you had someone that actually goes with you and assists you on tasks. Is that what I understood?
Oh, no. In a way, there's a, during school, and right now even, I'll meet with like a therapist every month or so and just talk about strategies and things that will help me to focus on things throughout the day. But nobody really attends me or anything. I'm fully independent, I guess you could say. So.
And so when you say you go to the store, you're able to drive yourself to the store, go to the store without anyone, any assistance at all, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And then briefly, just kind of tell us about your educational accommodations that you've been given in the past.
A couple of the accommodations were for me, for exam taking, it would be to take the exams if they were in person, to take them in a separate room, away from noises. And I was also granted extra time because for me, with the reading and the ADHD inattentive, it's hard for me to read and sit for one section for a certain amount of time to be able to fully grasp what each question is asking, if that makes sense. And so being able to be in a separate room with additional time helped take away the stress of not comprehending what the question is asking, because I have extra time to actually slowly read the question and give myself the time to be able to really understand what the question is being asked, as well as I have been approved for noise-canceling headphones and things like that. I was never granted that during my schooling just because of COVID. I could be in a separate room at home on my computer and be able to do that. But I also did have this software uploaded to my computer called Natural Reader, where it would read any type of document or test or whatever text that I had on my computer out loud, and I could follow along. And it had specific font for dyslexia, which I have slight slight, very minimal dyslexia, so that helped me follow along and understand what the questions were asking in the text that I was reading.
Do you believe that if you don't obtain the accommodations, you'd be able to take the test?
I think I've taken two practice exams, and both of them, I have not been able to finish all the questions in the allotted amount of time. And that has always been my Achilles heel with test exams, was the allotted time. And so without the accommodations, I don't feel confident that I would be able to answer all the questions and fully take the exam. With the extended amount of time, specifically from my experience from my graduate degree, it has helped tremendously to help me be able to finish the exam and be able to answer all the questions as effectively as possible. So to answer your question briefly, if I didn't have the accommodations, yeah, I feel like it would really affect my ability to pass the board.
And I understand it might affect your ability to pass, but it wouldn't affect your ability to take the exam, correct?
To take the exam, I mean, I could read the questions. However, to finish all of them in the allotted amount of time, I am doubtful that I'd be able to finish all the questions.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have any further questions.
This is Karen Bustillo. I have a question about how you've managed, like on your clinical internships, and if you were given accommodations during those situations.
Yeah, so that was actually one of the things that I talked with all of my CIs and let them know kind of the situation, because I was still learning about what the accommodations were and different aspects of this and how I can receive help, because like I said, I didn't know I had this until, you know, a couple of years ago. So this is the accommodations and approaches were all different for me. However, communicating with my CIs, we've been able to establish it specifically during my first clinical rotation, just additional time to be able to document and be able to have a separate space to be able to focus and think, as opposed to being in a big office with multiple therapists, because in that case, I would get really distracted and wouldn't be able to get my documentation effectively done in a good amount of time to help me see the rest of my patients and be able to get done in a timely manner. So that's something that we kind of carried along with the rest of my clinical rotations. I would document in a separate room, away or minimizing from the distractions, so that I could get everything done in a timely manner.
Did you, when you're working with patients, were you able to work in a room that had other people in it besides just your patient, like in a gym situation, or did you have to have a private room for that as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I'm fully capable of working with the actual physical tasks of the profession of being a physical therapist. I can do in a normal clinic, in a normal gym environment, in front of other patients or the therapist. That's totally fine. It's more of the detailed aspects of the occupation where, like I said, like with documentation is where I find the most difficulty if I'm not focused and in more of a little secluded area to be able to get my documentation done. That was really the only barrier that I had.
That's all the questions I have.
And if it's okay, I'd like to add, by my last rotation, I was able to see a full caseload, being able to document and see all the patients for a full-time physical therapist without any interruption. So I hope that also adds a little bit of info and clarity for you as well.
Yeah, thank you.
Just a point of clarification for the request for the extra room. I guess that's with each of the board.
I'm not familiar with that as a possibility when I think about a Prometric testing center. Is that something that's possible? I'm not sure that that's been done. So that's just my naivety.
Which one was that, Dr. Hike?
The extra room.
Yeah, the separate room has been done.
Okay, thank you.
So I guess it seems to me that really reading is the issue, and time to comprehend. Our job is to make sure that you have access to the exam, Stuart, but not to ensure that if we're giving you all of these accommodations that it will help you pass. And so we struggle a little bit sometimes if we can't see the problem with a major life function that you continually use accommodations or use strategies to help you get through that. So I might be in favor of a private room, but I'm not in favor of extra time. Right now.
And Dr. Bastillo, I agree with you. I understand that these accommodations might help the applicant succeed in the exam, but I believe he has access to the exam without them. And I would move to deny the requested accommodations.
I'll second that.
If I can ask just a clarifying question, if that's okay, what would it take for me to be able to have those accommodations? It's just in saying, you know, I feel like they help me tremendously to be able to actually finish the exam. I'm curious, you know, if there's any possible way to be able to have these accommodations.
Again, you demonstrated on your final clinical rotation that you were able to complete all of the tasks that you were required to do as a physical therapist in terms of treating patients and documenting within the required length of time and within a group setting. And so I feel like that's the job we're asking you to do once you pass the MPTE, and that you're able to do that. And so it's not showing true need to be able to access the examination.
Okay. I can understand what you're saying. I'm just a little worried because having gone through, like I said, this program for my PT degree, those accommodations were something that really helped me for test taking specifically. Not necessarily, you know, I have specific things to do for my personal life and life outside of school or outside of work that helped me with certain things. However, for specific like exams, there's that additional need for me to be able to have some extra time or even a secluded area so that I can actually focus and understand what the questions are even being asked. And I don't want to be a stickler. If there's any way, and we can even take this off to a private conversation as well, it's up to you. I'm just curious if there's any way that I could receive those accommodations.
We do currently have a motion on the table that's been moved and seconded.
Do John or Giovanni have any thoughts?
I'm kind of struggling with this, but I tend to be more on the same page as you guys. You know, it's not necessarily limiting any major life functions. And just to kind of clarify, like what that actually means is, you know, we talked about earlier, like if you go to the grocery store, you know, forgetting to get a couple of things from the grocery stores, you're still going to be able to continue on normally with your life. If you need to go back and get those, you can. If your disability limited you from even going to the grocery store without some sort of assistance, like Mr. Greer had thought earlier, you had mentioned that you had somebody who had to go with you and, you know, potentially do the grocery shopping for you at that point, that would be more, it limits your ability to go through completing a major life function that's needed. You know, so, I mean, this is definitely a struggle for all of us, I think, when these kind of things come up, because we want you to be able to succeed on the exam, obviously, but at the same time, you know, we can't just approve, you know, every accommodation that request that comes through for helping somebody to actually pass the exam. It has to in some way affect, you know, your life, you know, from a functional level. And, you know, I kind of agree with you guys that in this situation, it doesn't. I kind of had the initial thought you did, Dr. Bustillo, about maybe we could do a separate room, maybe the noise cancellation headset. But at the same time, I don't want to set a precedent where now that becomes the expectation for everybody as well. You know, where they can refer back to a previous case.
I agree. And I think one of the key statements was for me was that you were able to function in a busy gym and be able to do your documentation. So I'm in agreement.
Okay. I feel like we can, vote on this.
I'm sorry. Just one more question. And then I promise you can move on. With the neuropsychological exam that I had when I was diagnosed with it, the neuropsychologist mentioned that if there were, you know, any questions about it, being able to use those accommodations that I've been using for my schooling to take on the board, that there should be an ability to use them. And so I guess if I'm understanding correctly, everybody feels that if I'm able to function outside of test taking, to be able to get things, you know, done without accommodations in the regards of extra time or a quiet place to take the exam, that would not qualify me for those accommodations.
That's correct.
And when we review those scores, which is a lot of scores in the neuropsych evaluation, you're average to above average in the majority of them.
And what we're saying is we just don't see a disability that impairs a major life function. And I think that's the reason I'm going to vote in favor of the motion.
Are we ready for the vote?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded to deny Stuart Dorsch's request for ADA accommodations for the exams. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Haidt?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton is absent. The motion passes by roll call.
All right. So best of luck to you, Stuart. Okay, moving on here. We are now into number 5, the consent agenda. Item B, applications recommended for approval of physical therapist assistant certification. Upon completion of application, including receipt of transcripts and passages of the MPTE and AZ Law, regarding Jessica Duggar. Is Jessica present? Okay. Does anyone have any feelings about this applicant?
I move to grant licensure. Or is it a certificate? It might be a certificate.
Yeah, certificate. I second.
Great. I would agree. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we can vote.
It has been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda, including the items found in 5B. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Still absent. Motion passes.
All right, so that is the end of our consent agreement. We do not have any administrative hearings, informal hearings, or rehearings. We are now on to number 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters. 9A is with Stacy Billiard. Is Stacy on the phone?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. And I believe your attorney is present as well.
Good morning.
Great. And so we'll have an overview by Mindy, please.
Good morning, members of the board, Ms. Kent and Ms. Billiard. Complaint 2124 was opened by the board after review of a case last year that involved the inappropriate conduct of one of Ms. Billiard's employees when he was treating her under her supervision. The patient in question was a minor at the time that she was treated. She received 41 treatments for her lower back pain over a 5-month time frame. Based on interviews and review of the medical records, several areas of potential violations in Ms. Billiard's care of this patient were identified and outlined in the investigative report. Ms. Billiard and her attorney, Ms. Kent, received a copy of the draft investigative report, and they provided a response, which is included as Exhibit 10 in your board review materials. The issues for you to consider in this matter are that several PTAs were working under Ms. Billiard's supervision at the time. So on each date of service and based on the patient acuity per our regulations, did Ms. Billiard determine that it was appropriate for PTA to treat this patient? The evidence would suggest that at the time the PTAs were routinely creating and modifying treatment plans. In addition, based on medical record review and interviews, they substantiate that Ms. Billiard did not reassess this particular patient of 41 visits to collect objective data that would measure measurable progress since the start of care, determine the efficacy of current plans of care, review and address the goals, and address the home exercise program. Finally, the patient was a minor. There was no documentation to support that the parents were actively involved in their daughter's treatment and plan of care. Of note, while Ms. Billiard states in her most recent interview that she had, and in her written response, that she has changed her clinical practice since this complaint was open, there was no documentation to support this in my investigation. She and Ms. Kent were provided an opportunity to submit additional cases to demonstrate compliance with the supervisory requirements and clinical care standards, but this was declined. In the investigative report, the statute cited in Ms. Billiard's case include ARS 2044-4, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist due to a deliberate or negligent act or failure to act, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established, ARS 32-2044-6 and its companion R-424-303, failing to supervise assistive personnel, physical therapy students, or interim permit holders in accordance with this chapter and rules, And on each date of service, a physical therapist shall determine, based on the patient's acuity and treatment plan, whether it's appropriate to use assistive personnel to perform a selected treatment intervention or physical therapy task for the patient. ARS 32-2044-22, providing treatment intervention unwarranted by the condition of the patient or treatment beyond the point of reasonable benefit. And finally, R-424-304, adequate patient records. The findings of fact are outlined in the investigative report. This case is for your review.
Does any board member have a question for Dr. Billiard, would you or your attorney like to make an opening comment?
Yes, I will.
Casey wants to make an opening comment at least. Thank you, Dr. Brasillo. Yes.
I would just like to say that I have done my best throughout the years as a physical therapist, as well as with running my business. I consider myself a person of integrity who tries to follow rules and regulations and tries to be honest in my practice. My priority has always been to provide high quality care in a safe environment for the patients that come through our doors. That is why when I found out that I had an employee that was accused of inappropriate behavior, I took action and not only let him go, but also reported the behavior to the board. In the process, I was surprised to find myself under investigation. However, after reviewing the accusation against me, it came to light that I and my staff had discrepancies in our documentation and that my PTAs had misunderstandings of what constituted a discussion of patient status. After personal reflection and assessment, I took these complaints and made changes to my own practice as a physical therapist as well as the business practice in order to ensure improved documentation and communication to further enhance the quality of care our patients receive. As I have shown a willingness to not only learn from the errors, but to also proactively make changes to my practice based on the complaint that was brought against me, I would ask that the board dismiss the complaint.
Does anyone have any questions?
This is Josh, Mr. Greer. Could you tell us what, you know, you said you noticed discrepancies in the documentation. You know, what do you think the cause of those discrepancies was, and what have you done to fix that so it doesn't happen in the future?
So one discrepancy is that the progress notes were not performed. At the time, we had acquired taken over another practice. We were in the midst of doing all of that, and my receptionist was the one, the scheduler was the one who was in charge of scheduling those progress reports, and that was an oversight on my part. I did not make sure that that was occurring when it should. So what I have done since is I have educated my staff to look at those, all staff, to watch that. I have educated my front office to watch that. I have put in different notes on the schedule itself to show when the progress notes need to be performed. And I have also made notes within the written chart. And we keep a written flow sheet for exercises to show that needs to occur. So that has taken care of that. With my PTAs, I have discussed the importance of documenting that we have made the discussion. I have made sure that they know that the discussion is happening, and I have made sure that they understand what needs to go in that documentation and what needs to be said, and made sure that when things are changed that they go ahead and put that in there as well, if that is appropriate. Other things is, you know, just in documentation in general, I am trying, is that this is documentation is something I feel like is an ongoing process to improve, and I continue to try to improve how I am documenting and justifying the plan of care and continued treatment.
Do you contend or do you believe that you did evaluate this patient during the course of the patient's 41 visits and it just wasn't documented correctly? Is that what I understand?
I do, because when I see a patient, I am working with a patient every time I see them, I am discussing how they're doing, what is going on, what is continuing to make their pain worse, what is getting better. When they perform their exercises, I am watching their exercises. When I do the manual techniques, I'm assessing how, their response to that, how their movement is, how their muscle tension is, and I am watching their exercises to functionally see how they are stabilizing, how they are moving, and all of that.
Thank you.
Dr. Billiard, this is Hike. I have a few questions for you in terms of the number of assistive personnel that you have. I believe it says 3 PTs, 4 PTAs, and 4 techs. Is that correct throughout the time frame that we're describing, or did you had some fluctuation, I think, with an office worker as well, correct?
Yes, so that is what we had on staff. They did not all, they were not all there at work at the same time. They were not all on the clock. We maintained the specific supervision ratio.
Yep. And so are these individuals full time or part time?
Are you talking about at the time of discussion or currently?
I'm sorry. Yes, the time of discussion. Thank you.
So the PTAs were all, or excuse me, the physical therapists were all full time. I had one full time PT and I apologize. I have to go back and three part time PTAs. So one full time PTA, three part time PTAs. And
I'm sorry,
all the PTs were full time.
Okay. So it seems that in terms of the documentation that you normally see about 300 patients a week. Is that correct?
Yes.
So I'm thinking about the timeline that you have in terms of touching base with the PTAs and making sure and ensuring that those PTAs are aware of changes that patient may have. Can you explain how that process occurs in terms of when you are, when something happens with a patient and you need to let the PTA know that, and when that would occur in line with when the PTA was going to work with that patient, if that makes sense?
So,
I'm happy to repeat.
Yeah, if you will clarify just one more, just to make sure I'm understanding exactly what you're asking. Are you asking when that occurs, how that is happening in the clinic?
Correct.
Okay. So the way that is happening in the clinic is that the PTA, when they come before they start their patient load, they go to each individual therapist and they talk about the patients that are on their caseload. Often during the day, we have an open gym, a very open area. So if there are any changes, we can often hear that, or the PTA will come and talk to us if we see something, because we're all there and we can all see what is going on. If we see something, we can go and talk to the PTA right then. At the end of the day or during lunch, I also ask about my patients so that I know how they are doing and what is going on. And then that way, if it's the next day, if I know what is going on, if there is a change in their status or if there's a change that has been reported to me, I can continue that treatment and continue making modifications as needed when the patient is seen the next time, so that we always know what's going on with that patient.
Stacy, can you tell Dr. Is it Hike or
up a hill?
Hike, okay. Can you tell Dr. Hike how you formalized this from when you were seeing this patient. I think that's important.
Between last, do you mean between last year and currently?
Yes.
So yes, excuse me, I'm sorry.
I think he would like to hear how you've changed the process and you formalize these communications with your aides. That's what he wants to hear now, I think.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying. Last year, it was, I would say, more informal. I would talk to them as they would come in. I would go into the office as they were maybe documenting or looking at somebody. I would quickly talk about a patient and kind of talk to them throughout the day for patients. So it wasn't a real formal meeting. Currently, the PTAs come in 15 minutes early and we can sit down and we sit down with their schedule and we go through each patient individually. And then at the end of the day, during lunch, I do ask about the patients that they have seen so that I know what's going on and I can report that for the next time that the patient is being seen, or if we need to change anything in their treatment plan, meaning if I need to see the patient, I will know that right away because the PTAs will come and talk to me about that right away.
Thank you. That's helpful. I think one of the things when I think about this patient is about the diagnosis of ankylosing spondylitis and how that that condition is usually much worse and has a characteristic of ebbing and flowing, exacerbations and remissions of low back pain, and is worse the earlier the diagnosis. So in this case, a minor, which is abnormal, being diagnosed with this condition, there would be a lot more fluctuation in terms of how this patient does throughout the time period. And so my concern is the assessment part of this specific patient and that being conveyed from the PTA in aquatics or in land to you and back and forth. Can you explain some of those aspects relative to this patient?
Yes. So when the patient, you're right, the patient did fluctuate, especially in the beginning. She was easily aggravated. And so we did talk about that with the PTAs before she, and so when she was being seen on land, and that was frequently talked about. Again, I was there while she was being treated. I could see that. We would talk in the office before and after. They would tell me how she was doing, but I was there and could see and talk about it with her as well. I frequently even talked to the patient during her treatment. When she went back to the pool area, when we decided to incorporate pool exercises because she was struggling to get that strength on land because of her ebbs and flows, I would talk to our aquatic therapist. I would make it a point to go out beforehand, before the beginning of the day, and we discussed specifically their treatments and specifically what needed to happen. And then when the patient comes in, she would stay in the gym and get worked on manual therapy. And then when she would go back to the pool, there would be a discussion back in the pool about what she reported that day, how she was feeling that day, and any, you know, maybe we can push it a little bit. Maybe we need to back off a little bit that day. And then discussions were happening at the end on how she was doing. If we feel like she's, you know, between how she was doing her exercises, if we feel like she could progress that, she was showing better stabilization, or if we needed to come back because she was in having some more flare-ups and we needed to watch that.
Okay, thank you. I think another point or question I have is in your policies and procedures manual, you note for the physical therapist and the physical therapist assistant that they are required to do daily documentation for each patient. Yet when I look and review this note, these notes, there are scenarios where individuals are signing notes much, much, much later. And then as well, in some cases, you were co-signing those notes, if I understand that correctly, in mass. So 2 months after a note was being done. And in blocks, so if I look at the treatment plan for this patient, and I look at the next note session for that patient, it's done a minute later after that patient is that note has been signed. So you have read through a note in 1 minute and signed off for that note. Can you explain that aspect?
I can. Again, at that time, thank you. Again, at that time, we had acquired a different practice, and we had to merge the two. We were both on the same documentation and system, but we had to merge that. Unfortunately, their documentation system did not use the same billing that we did. So if I finalize those notes at the time of the that they occurred, it would not have flown into my billing system until we had everything merged. And so I had to hold the notes. And so that's why I did it like that, because I had to hold the notes in order to get it into the documentation system. So I had already read through the notes, but I had to hold it at that time and then do them all together.
So what you're telling Dr. Hike is you had read them at the time, but you didn't find them because of this merging of practice.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so that when you went back and signed them, that was a re-review. Am I right?
Correct.
Does that answer your question, Dr. Hike?
It does. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Also, can you explain to Dr. Hike, is that merging of the practices and the billing issues, is that all resolved now?
That is resolved now.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. I just wanted to see, in terms of how the supervision of PTAs is working within your clinic, how is that now being communicated within the documentation? Is there a certain statement that you guys put into documentation now to kind of cover discussions that you guys have? Do you document it somewhere else? How does that take place now?
It is documented within the daily note itself. It's a documentation. It's a statement that says that the communication did happen. And it also talks of it. There's also a statement on who the supervising therapist is and their license number as well.
Okay. And then how about in regard to if a PTA is going to, say, progress an exercise with somebody or add a new exercise, if they're talking to you first regarding that, is that also being documented within there? Is that being communicated at all? Is that even occurring?
That is occurring, but so when we talk about the patient at the beginning of the day, we do talk about appropriate, how they're doing and appropriate progression and addition of exercises. To be honest, I do not, the statement is really just that they have talked to us and that it is, appropriate for them to treat the patient, that we have discussed that. So that is something that I can, again, I'm always looking for ways to improve, so I can definitely add that to my practice.
Yeah, I think that would definitely be beneficial, just to outline, like, what are the things that were discussed when you got talking regarding the patients, for sure.
Okay, thank you for the feedback.
Of course.
This is Karen Busti. I have one, maybe two questions. How often are you doing progress notes or reevaluations at this point on most patients?
We are doing them every 30 days or 10 visits, whichever occurs first. 30 days for most insurances, of course, with Medicare, the 10-visit rule.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions or concerns?
Dr. Bastille, would I be able to make just a closing statement really quickly?
Yeah, I just want to see if anyone else has any questions first.
Yes, sure.
Yeah, that would be great, Ms. Kent. Please do.
So I hope that in the few minutes that you've spent with Stacy, you can see how conscientious she is. And she's here before the board because she really tried to be compliant with the board regulations. And she's used this experience as a very much a learning experience. And she's made changes in her practice. And so where I come in is, where does discipline come in versus learning? And I really would encourage the board to consider the evidence on just culture versus discipline, which is very timely in this case, because we know that all errors cannot be prevented and that all practices can improve. We know that all errors cannot be prevented. And I believe that the regulatory statutes provide for discipline for serious and repeated mistakes, which is defined differently, by the way, than an error, because we're all human. We all commit errors. We commit them every single day. That's just the way that healthcare is. It's a very complex organization. And so I believe that this case does not warrant discipline. If anything, I would recommend a letter of concern addressing the items that have been remediated, given the very conscientious approach that Stacy has taken to this board complaint. So that would be my recommendation. Dismissal is appropriate under the just culture evidence or a letter of concern. That's all. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Does anyone have any thoughts on where we go?
I tend to agree that an advisory letter is appropriate here. I think licensee has learned a lot through the process. I do believe licensee was the initial reporter on the case that we disciplined, and I think that should be taken into consideration. Frankly, I agree with the attorney. I'm kind of vacillating between dismissal and advisory letter, but that's what I think.
I actually have just a quick question for Ms. Billiard. Ms. Billiard, have you taken any continuing education on documentation or anything like that since all this has occurred?
I have not. I tried to find one with the docket, some of the things that are, the system that I was using for continuing ed at the time or that I'm using, and I couldn't find one that seemed adequate for outpatient documentation or that really seemed to apply to this or that seemed very good. And so I had not taken one yet.
But Stacy, you're willing and planning on doing that.
Very much so.
Okay. And that kind of goes with where my thought process was going with this of, I think it would be appropriate to maybe assign continuing education, like a non-disciplinary continuing education. I agree with Mr. Greer. I think an advisory letter would be good in this case as well. But I wouldn't necessarily, based on everything that we've heard, go with any disciplinary action at this point.
I would agree with continuing education in the area of documentation. I don't know if that needs to be a consent or an advisory letter with the addition of please do these CEUs. Happy to have help in this area.
Hey, Dr. Bastille, we can order non-disciplinary continuing education right now, or we can issue a advisory letter with our concerns. If we do the non-disciplinary continuing education, the licensee has to do it. If we do the advisory letter, she doesn't have to do it.
Got it.
So if you want to make a motion, I'll second it.
Okay. I'd like to move that we do a non-disciplinary order of continuing education for 6 hours of documentation, which can be taken online, to be completed within 6 months.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Miss Billiard, if you're looking for a course, there is one on the APTA website that I think will cover pretty well a lot of what you do within the outpatient setting. It hits on a little bit of everything, but it'll definitely cover things that you're looking for as well.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I will do that.
Yeah. Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready for the vote.
The motion before you for case 2124 Stacy Billiard PT is to issue a non-disciplinary order to include continuing education, which shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved, may be completed online, and do not count towards renewal requirements. This continuing education shall be completed in the area of documentation for a minimum of 6 hours. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton? Mr. Barton is absent. Motion passes.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Bastillo, we'd like to stop the recording and restart since we've been for an hour so far.
Sounds great.
We're going to stop the recording at 9:28.